The following podcast is part of the MindBodySpirit.fm podcast network.
You're listening to Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Are you ready to create a life that's intentional and dynamic? Welcome to The Intentional Spirit with your host, Reverend Temple Hayes.
Welcome, everyone. Thank you so much for being with us. And I always like to applaud all of you that are either listening at the time we're doing this show or at another time as a download. And just, you know, really give a shout out to that level of namaste that says, the God within me meets and recognizes the God within you. And I love that statement Mark Nepo says, that though what we reach for may be different, what makes us reach is the same. And when we are intentional spirits, we are always taking steps forward to the betterment of our lives, to the betterment of a meaningful life. So how apropos that today we have the author. His book is written now in many languages. It has sold so many copies, and the title is Toward a Meaningful Life. We have with us today Rabbi Simon Jacobson. Welcome, Rabbi Simon. I'm so glad you're here.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
Oh, absolutely. I've really been looking forward to our conversation. And where do you reside? Where do you live?
Well, my soul lives everywhere. It transcends time and space. But my body presently is in Brooklyn, New York. You've heard of this little town?
Oh, yes. Brooklyn, New York, where they have the famous Brooklyn bread.
Correct.
Absolutely. I love that you said your soul lives everywhere. Isn't that the truth? Well, tell us about your path. You know, I think people learn so much from storytelling. And did you always know your path, how you wanted it to be, or?
No, I did not. I grew up in a very Orthodox and Hasidic Jewish home. My parents, both Russian-born, came over to the United States after World War II. So I grew up in a very intense Jewish education. But a lot of it was somewhat didactic and dogmatic. You know, they tell you what the rules are. I didn't always feel the soul. I mean, I loved the people around me. I had great influences, parents, educators. I was never abused by the system. I think, you know, full disclosure, so I wasn't hurt. But I didn't, till my teenage years, and I'm like a skeptic, an explorer, I didn't hear the music, let's put it that way. It's when I began to appreciate the spirituality of it, the deeper spiritual forces that are unleashed through our actions and through our good deeds and the virtue. Then that's when it resonated with me, and I can say that's when I found my path, where I really said, you know what, this is for me. I'm ready. I want to be part of this revolution to bring some spiritual light to the world and be part of the solution instead of part of the problem. You know, long story short, but I went through, as all of us do, through my teenage years, the ups and downs, the questioning. Again, I was surrounded by very fine people, which was a big help to me. My parents, my father was a journalist, so though he grew up in a very Orthodox home, but it was also very open-minded. You know, ideas, skepticism. There was no fear of challenging thoughts. It wasn't like mind control, which unfortunately many people do experience in very religious environments. So this all served me well and allowed my spirit to soar, if you wish, and to spread my wings. And as I took 17, 18, 19 years old, I really immersed myself in the spiritual teachings, and ever since, I've never looked back. It's literally like music. I'm not exaggerating, Temple. It's really, you know, when once you hear the music, you can't ignore its resonating effect on you, like sensing deeper truths and higher truths. So ever since, I've been, I see myself as somewhat of a bridge between the spiritual and the secular. That's a long story. That's in brief. Yeah.
I love that. I've been in a very contemplated space today myself. Today, this day, 30 years ago, is when I gave my first minister talk at 6 p.m. on the east coast of Florida. I gave my first talk. And so 30 years, I've been a spiritual leader one way or another. And, you know, I gave that talk, and I'm still giving it and still longing to grow into it and understand it.
Beautiful. Wow. 30 days this week, 30 years this 30 week.
Years.
Wow.
30 years. Yes. And I'm so young, so I don't know how that's possible, but, yeah, it's like I love what you said. And I think that's so poignant to people listening, is that, you know, when you hear the music, you just know, and that's the space. Is when you hear that, you know, calling that it has.
So I want to congratulate you. 30 years is a milestone. Should be many, many more healthy years.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing more gratifying. Well, not to pull rank. I've been doing this now for 40 years. Not exactly. Not in the 40th year, but a little more than 40 years. So I'm a little older than you, probably.
I don't know about that. I'm 62, so I'm
going to compare. I'm 64. Okay.
Okay, we're kids. Hey, we're just getting
who's counting?
Started.
Who's counting?
For 150, so I'm not even halfway there yet. I'm going for a larger number. I figure, why not aim higher? You know, we've got to stretch our capacity and, you know, look for something, because our bodies are designed to live a lot longer than they do. So,
right. In my book, Toward a Meaningful Life, I write, the soul never ages. It only gets younger. So, yeah. And
I love that. Rabbi Simon, when did your, and everyone that's tuning in, you can go to meaningfullife.com, meaningfullife.com. I told him earlier before we got on the show, that's like the best URL ever. But when did you, I know that you've written a lot and you've been featured, on CBS, CNN, PBS, MSNBC, Fox, NPR. I mean, you know, you have been sharing your wisdom, your insights, your ponderings for, as you're saying, almost close to 40 years now. What really speaks to you about this book? I know it's already a bestseller. It's in many languages. What called your heart to be in this space of Toward a Meaningful Life?
Good question. So I think maybe some background would help. When I, going back to my teenage years, when I did hear the music and I began to really, I felt like I was a rebel without a cause, but then I found my cause, which was, I saw the great need for spiritual healing in this world, and so many of the ills and the things that trouble us, whether it's anxiety and fear or the insecurities of our material lives, can be addressed and even healed through spiritual approach. So I got myself very involved in a process which is very rare, and I'd love to share it with you and your audience. Because of Jewish law, on the Shabbat, on the Sabbath, and on the holidays, we don't write notes, and no recordings are made. So my master, my teacher, who was called Rabbi Menachem Schneerson, who was called the Rebbe, lovingly, like the mentor, the teacher, so when he would speak, there were no notes. So I was one of the few that was able to actually remember verbatim, sometimes 5-6 hours of these talks. So we're talking about 100, 150 pages. And it taught me to learn to listen and absorb a truth that's greater than myself, which, as we all know, is one of the secrets to all growth. Get your ego out of the way and allow yourself to be a channel and absorb something beyond yourself. And it literally transformed my life. And after he had passed away in 1994, I was working in publishing all these teachings, but they were dense and more academic. That's when I felt the need to write Toward a Meaningful Life, which I did in 1995, an original edition. And it really was a way of trying to communicate in simple English without getting into any density or prohibitive language. These deep mystical and psychological truths that so became part of my life. And I actually asked people, literally in the street, I said, men, women of different faiths, of no faith, of different ages, like, what are the 30 most important topics in your life? And everybody, interestingly, we all have the same issues. It's just the different stages in life, and that is, begins with birth and childhood and education, love, marriage, intimacy, depression, wealth, health, you know, the list goes on. So I wrote a chapter on all of these 30 items. I broke the book down into three sections, personal, social, and theological. The personal being personal issues, and the social is like things like science and technology, or responsibility, or government, and then the theological, good and evil, unity, God. And I wrote it from my heart. You know, I have an expression that I love is, words from the heart enter the heart. And it was a labor of love, and thank God it was really successful in the sense a major publisher picked it up, William Morrow, and the rest is history. I mean, ever since I've been, I mean, I was, I don't know how you describe it. I had success preceded infrastructure, let me put it that way. I had a book out there, but I didn't have an infrastructure to communicate with people. So I slowly, that's where I built the Meaningful Life Center, and hence meaningfullife.com, as an outgrowth of that book's impact. I traveled across the country and across the world, spoke in many, many places. God blessed me with the power of communicating and writing it through words, or through the written word and the spoken word. And I tried to really, as I said before, I try to speak from my heart and soul without, never, I cannot stand judgmental or condescending or preaching. And I go by the line that, I don't know who coined it, but people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. Mm-hmm. And that's my life.
That's one of my most favorite thoughts or statements, or when I've ever been in healthcare or someplace training, you know, people, that's such a profound line, and it never ages. It just deepens, you know. People don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And that's so true. And that, to me, that sets apart an entirely different orator or speaker, you know, when you are in the midst of them. If it's inclusive, you just feel it, and your heart seems to be so much more receptive and open, you know. And that's, I think, one of the things in researching you and looking at, you know, your work and everything, is I love that you are so inclusive. There's no divide, you know, in your languaging and how you share, and is so approachable for people of all walks of life and all ages. And I mean, I'm sure you already know this, but I was just admiring that and, you know, researching you and knowing more about you. I also love that the Meaningful Life Center is referred to as the spiritual Starbucks. Huh. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that was based on something. New York Times writer once interviewed me, and I was saying, we're trying to bridge here the best of the senses and the best of the spiritual. And I said, the senses, you know, like having a nice coffee, at the same time stimulating, which is stimulating to your senses and your sensory skills, but also to your soul. So that's where that came from. But I agree. Thank you so much, because that is exactly the bottom line. You know, that's why you and I have not met physically, but the fact that we can sit here and cross-pollinate, if you wish, or interact, mm-hmm. and synergize, that's what the story is. We are all souls on a journey, and our souls are all part of one larger, beautiful mosaic, and a lot of it is mysterious, which is part of the beauty. And it's so gratifying when I meet someone I've never seen before, and then we find something in common, and we all have things in common. And that, to me, that's the best way to counter so much of the negativity out there, the negative energy and divisiveness, is by really understanding. You know, I always say that spirituality unites and materialism divides. So it's our souls that connect us. Despite our diversity, we are all part of a larger a larger reality.
And it's so beautiful, you know, just to, when you, you know, approach another human being as we are today on open lines, not only are we in a space of no agenda, no script, but just the heart. We're kind of, we're writing it as we go along, one would say. We also have a part, I feel, spiritually that's called to say certain things or experience certain things that's going to touch the listener's soul and ears. And I just, I love that. And that's the reason I enjoy this show so much, is it's just about hearing someone's heart, the passion, you know, what's interesting, what drives him or her to, you know, keep living their vision and their mission and how to deepen that. And it's really wonderful. Well, I'm going to be outside of Brooklyn around Christmas. I'm speaking at Carnegie Hall. So if you're in town, perhaps we can find one another. I would like that.
Beautiful, beautiful Carnegie Hall. Wow.
Yeah,
that's
Christmas
great.
Eve. I do the Christmas Eve message there. Yes.
Okay, so that should be good. And then, you know, we're living in, what happened last year? Did you do it last year? I guess everything
we
was
did
closed.
Not, since they weren't open, but I did the year before. Mm-hmm.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, I did the year before, and it was such a beautiful experience. We invited a number of homeless people to come and participate and gifted them with tickets. And what I loved about it the most is you couldn't tell one person from another. You know, we're all part of that, like you're saying, that glorified human space and that deeper connection. I imagine that your book has really accelerated during this period that we're somewhat coming out of now. I know you were hit so hard with the pandemic in New York, and the sense I get about you is that you're a real grounded tree, if you will, just as a metaphorical kind of thing. Of people really look to you, especially in chaotic times or hard to understand times. I have a sense that you remain with faith through any of it. Am I correct? Am I reading that correctly?
Well, yes, absolutely. It's the only thing we have to rely on that doesn't waver. In the storms, you know, you need to have mm-hmm. that grounding, those roots that you mentioned. The analogy of a tree is a good one because it has the deep roots. And we know that without that, there's an expression in the Kabbalistic and the mystical teachings that when you're tied above, you don't fall below. Look, in the uncertain times that we've all gone through, times of disruption of people's security blankets and comfort zones have been shaken up. You need to dig deeper and find those values and the spirit that really keeps you afloat. And without that, it becomes increasingly difficult, as I've seen it. For many people, it brought out the best in them, and for others, unfortunately, the other way around. So yes, absolutely. In this period, the last year and a half, I cannot tell you. I've been like an overdrive. Because, firstly, people's needs are very openly acknowledged, people's sense of vulnerability. You know, you can't go to theater, your travel plans are disrupted, and school and work. I mean, there's no sector of life, Temple, that has not been affected. So then people are very open to, they're looking for direction and guidance, and above all, courage and strength. That's what uncertainty does. So I felt, and to be very honest, I felt like almost I was trained for this moment. It's like when you're trained mm-hmm. in the military, then comes the day where you have to go to battle. So this was a spiritual battle for souls, and being able to find a deeper fortitude and direction and guidance. So yes, I was, and still, it's dramatically affected my work in the good way. I would have hoped to, you know, we all hope it should come in pleasant times, but sometimes it's what happens when there's crisis and unknowns that causes people. That's a wake-up call, and that's what I experienced, and I'm sure you did as well in your work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I just remember that first week when it was evident that things were closing and this wasn't going away, and a c- couple of weeks, like some of us had originally hoped for or thought. You know, it's like we owe it to ourselves to really be the best we've ever been. You know, that our soul chose to be here during this time, and we owe it to ourselves to be leaders about what we believe. And this is not a time to go weary. This is a time to be more articulate and brave and more invested in what we believe. It's easy, I find, you know, to feel and state what I believe in my own inner theology, if you will, when everything's just kind of flowing along. It's another thing to have a moral responsibility to stand tall in the midst of things that we don't understand. What I think supported me so much is that I'm always using that idea of being a mystic, you know, of being a mystic, of living in the mystery and not knowing. And now I affirm, you know, everybody is.
Yeah, that's the illusion. People, especially in our prosperous and successful times, people can have the illusion of invulnerability, that we're supermen, and then suddenly you wake up and realize, one second here, a little microbe, invisible to the naked eye, has disrupted the entire world. So if you're wise, it teaches you, you know, what really matters, and don't be arrogant in feeling that success lies only on a surface level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I have a feeling like Jane Goodall does, that, you know, it's part of this is the necessity for us to get back to nature, you know, to get back to all the gifts that our Creator has given us, and to be more connected in that way. And I'm of course extremely curious, with you being our featured guest today, to dig deeper in some of your thoughts and values, and how the book Toward a Meaningful Life can be good medicine, you know, for people, because we're just barely coming out of this, and some cities slower than others, but you know, it's still something that's important for us to communicate about and talk about and learn together, that's for sure.
Well, look, the fact is that just as the human body needs nutrients, we need to eat and drink and sleep and exercise and fresh air and many other vitamins and minerals that keep us healthy, we also have a soul, and the soul also needs nutrients. Except the soul speaks a different language, and it's easy to ignore it when things are going well. When you're feeling physically well, if you're successful at your work, and everything else seems to be working, you just ignore, usually, the soul. That's the sad reality. But the soul can't be ignored forever, so it calls out to us, whether it's through anxiety or through an emptiness or through other factors where we're looking for love, or other ways that feed that soul. And when you have a disruption like we're experiencing now, an upheaval, it really forces us to recognize, hey, you know what? My food and my drink and my sleep are not enough. I need to find a deeper sense of fortitude and inner self, and I need to feed that. So those who have a regimen of spiritual vitamins, for lack of a better word, and are exercising their spiritual muscles, then they have that strength. But when you don't have it, or you have a minimal of it, that's when you have to really scramble and discover that inner self, because at the end of the day, we are not just physical beings that are here to survive. Now, I have an analogy in Toward a Meaningful Life. I use an analogy based on the book of Proverbs, that the soul is compared to a flame and the body to a wick. And the material body, the physical life we live, is pretty much stationary. I mean, of course, it's animated and has energy, but the real restlessness within us, I'm talking about healthy restlessness, comes from our souls, like a flame that's always flickering, seeking to defy gravity, looking upward, That's what the soul is, the part of us that is not satisfied with animal bliss and with just surviving and existing. It's that need for transcendence. And that need can be filled through travel, through music, through art, through sexuality, through romance, and or through religion and faith and spiritual experiences. But it needs to be fed, and the human being must have transcendence, or else we will not be happy people. So essentially, using the title of my book, Toward a meaningful life means not just a life, a social life, or even a family life, or a material life. It means that you also have higher purpose. Another way of putting it is, just like a business cannot function without a mission statement, a human being can't function without a personal calling. What is your mission? What is your calling? I ask people often, who are you? And they give me their business card. I said, but that's not who you are. That's what you do.
Right.
And then people sometimes respond in silence, or others will say, they'll sigh and they say, what can I do? I've been doing this for so long. Who I am has become a product of what I do, which of course is so sad. Your identity, your inner identity, who you are should dictate what you do, not what you do dictates who you are. It's like the ship telling the captain where it should go. And that's essentially the battle between what we'll call between matter and spirit, between materialism and spirituality, that very often we just ignore. But then at times like this, it's a wake-up call. Do something
about it. It's a wake-up call. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. We're going to be right back after this short break, and we're talking to Rabbi Simon Jacobson, and you can go to his website, meaningfullife.com. We'll be right back.
Discover the power within. Unity Online Radio. The voice of an awakening world.
Welcome back to The Intentional Spirit with Reverend Temple Hayes.
And welcome back, everyone, and thank you so much for being with us. I'm enjoying the value of a meaningful life today myself as I sit in the energy of Rabbi Simon Jacobson. You can go to his website. It's meaningfullife.com. He also has the Meaningful Life Center. So a true dedicated individual of what matters and, so pertinent to the times that we are living in now. You can go to my website, templehayes.com, or go to our community's website, firstunity.org, and find out the various and other things that we are doing and that what we are about. I've been loving, Rabbi Simon, your blogs and your writings. They're so rich with so much information. And I love the one, what makes a true leader? I think that's an important conversation and question right now, whether you are a leader as a parent or leader as a teacher or leader as a rabbi or leader as a spiritual leader or leader of a radio show like Jeff is. I think that that's a deeper question that we're always asking, what is a true leader and how do we really exemplify hope and faith and connection. And I've always loved that statement. I believe it was Toni Morrison that said it to Oprah, that she was always aware when she was around kids, she wanted them to see hope and possibility on her face and in her eyes. And I've never forgotten that.
Beautiful. That's beautiful. Well, look, we are definitely living in a time of leadership crisis, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. I think, especially with the media and technology, which of course is neutral, but it could amplify what they used to say, junk in, junk out, about mm-hmm. technology, it's neutral. But when you have a climate that is so polarized and so entertainment-based, commercial-based, unfortunately, people are pandering, and leadership today is really about power. What do they say? The love for power, not the power of love. and power and control and influence. And people have become very cynical and skeptical, especially in the last few years. Where true leadership, which was always spiritual leadership, when you look at the quintessential leader of the Bible, Moses. So how is he described? The humblest man that ever walked on earth. Interesting. Would anyone use that description for a leader today? The humblest man or woman walking on earth?
Yeah.
The description would be the leader is usually the guy with the guy that is most strategic, well connected, wealthy, maneuvering, maybe the most corrupt, the one that loves power more than anyone else. That sense of humility that you're here to serve others and you're not here to serve yourself, the idea that you're here to help people become better human beings, which is the true nature of a leader. In other words, the selflessness of the leader, not the self of the leader, is really sorely lacking. And I think you could see it even in the last pandemic crisis that's still going on. You know, at best, as one person told it to me, at best you have good administrators, firefighters, but the vision, direction, hope even, I mean, it's not something you really hear. It's a lot of infighting, a lot of politics. There's, again, the media amplifies it. You know, I know people in the media. I say, why don't you have on your program someone that's giving hope to people? And it doesn't have to be religious or spiritual, anything. Instead of, you know, it's all so much about the nitpicking and the infighting about the vaccine, yes, no. People's spirits are not being fed, and it's a lack. So the vacuum is very deep, and I think that's what makes our work so much more important. And I'm not saying it in any, you know, I'm saying in a humble way, exactly that. We're here to help and serve. And as you bring up children, to me, children are the perfect human being. You know, they say in technology, a iPhone or an Android 9 is better than Android 9 or iPhone 8. But I think with human beings, 1.0 is better than 1.1.
1.2. Right, exactly.
Because the child is the freshly fallen snow, straight from the hands of God, that has not been in any way polluted or tainted or corrupted by this world. And if we, you know, I look at children all the time. I have my own children. I have grandchildren. I look at them as like this is the better version of me. They don't have duplicity. They're seamless. They don't learn how to lie until they hear that from adults. There's something so beautiful and tender and, yes, vulnerable, and they need to be protected because we live in a very hostile and dark world. But children are like our greatest gift. And I always feel that how we treat our children and how we look at them is really the barometer of a society. It's not our standard of living and how much money we make and the GDP and the health insurance and life expectancy, but it's how we treat our children. The prophet says that the hearts of the parents will return through their children. So you bring up child, that's why there's no question to me. Children are the purest reminders of what spirit is about. Look at how children explore. They're not self-conscious, again, until adults impact them. And we can learn more from our children, I believe, than they can learn from us, frankly.
I totally sit with that. I've always said that in our society, it's almost like we have it backwards. You know, children are born with the new spiritual medicine that we need. They're born with new ways of viewing and seeing and feeling, and they're not editing where they're coming from or how they're speaking. And we're often so quick to just giving them the data that we already know. And when we train children with the data we already know, we're living in what we already have. Versus if we would draw more from them,
exactly,
then we are more evolving. We are more in an evolutionary place. And they offer so many blessings. My little five-year-old goddaughter, oh my gosh, I'm always fascinated, like, what's she going to come up with today? You know, and she'll look at me and go, well, you know, your spirit animal is blah, 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 blah. And I'm going, how does she know that? You know, where does she get that? It's just,
right.
It's such a blessing. It's such a blessing when we seek to not make them like us, but we allow them to make us better because of who they are. There's a big distinction there for sure.
Well, you use the word data. I would also add our prejudices and our biases and our that becomes something. Children are, one analogy that I really like is children are like besides freshly fallen snow, like warm wax. Everything they see and hear and experience is going to be etched into their psyches. And as their personalities harden into adults, it will remain there forever. I mean, you can always dislodge it, but it's not. It's more difficult. I think it was Frederick Douglass that said that it's infinitely easier to bring up a healthy child than to fix a broken adult. The problem is that the broken adults are in control of those children. To put it, I didn't mean to come out. It came across, I think, harsher than I wanted.
I didn't think it was harsh. I think we need you to be more harsh.
Okay.
But it's important, you know. I've always loved the quote, united, actually it happens to be mine, but it's united we stand, divided we are merely a distraction. And I love that, you know, you are communicating with the news, and I would love an advancement of not just constantly feeding a divide. I mean, that's so evident with it's almost like with every story, it's like, does it feed the divide? Oh yes, well then let's use it. I mean, that it's a consistent thing in the psyches of humanity, this division.
Absolutely, so. I can tell you, yeah. Listen, I can tell you from my own experience, just in these last few months, the producer of one of a major media outlet, who said to me, "I'd love to have you as a guest, but I need you to fight with the other guests, not physically fight, but like really." I said, "It's not my style. I want to be civil. I can disagree, but I'm not going to fight." It's not, you know. He says, "We need gladiators." That was his word. We need gladiators because people want blood. He was very blunt. I said, "Well, I mean, don't you think that people would also appreciate a civil disagreement instead of blood?" Well, it's a sad reality, but the good news is that there are many of us, and I believe on a grassroots level, really, I see from my work that they resonate with a deeper message. And the bottom line is, I mean, I always quote Oliver Wendell Holmes' classic, very sad, tragic poem called The Voiceless, where he begins, "Alas, to those that die with their song still inside them." Alas, imagine those that die with their song. We all have a unique song within us, and it's the greatest tragedy if you cannot sing it or you don't have the courage to sing it. I remember my son, when he was a little child, he came home from school. He was very excited, and I said, "What? Why are you so excited?" So he said, "I heard something really nice today." And I said, "What is it?" He said, "You were born an original. Don't become a copy." Okay. Now it's years later. He has his own children. So recently, I said to him, "So what happened with you? Did you become an original or a copy?" So he no pun intended, Temple, but he happens to be a copywriter.
Oh my gosh!
So he's good with words. He's a wordsmith.
Is that?
Yeah. So I said, "So what happened with you?" So he says, "I'm an original copy." Okay, whatever that means. It's the beauty that each of you, each of us, carries within us, that beautiful original song that you have, that's yours, has so often it's essentially completely overwhelmed and suffocated from us by the pressures of parents and educators and society, and we don't sing our song, we're singing someone else's song, and even that we're not doing well. So it's so vital to be able to find yourself and find that voice, and I feel, I mean, there's nothing more gratifying when you help people get to that place. Michelangelo said that when they asked him, "How do you sculpt those beautiful angels in the marble?" He said, "I see the angels trapped in the marble, and I carved and carved and set them free." I find that to be, that's so beautiful. That means you have the, you don't need to go shop for it. You don't need to go find it. It's all within you, the beauty that you have, the uniqueness, the divine spirit within you, the divine image, whatever word you want to use. But it's sometimes trapped in marble or concrete or other substances. And I think it's our role is to help carve. We're not here to create anything. We just help carve away the excess and the distractions to allow the soul to emerge. That's the message. I wish that was on every media channel, everywhere. People would hear that, you change the world. But unfortunately, we're countering, as you said, those that are feeding the divide, which goes the other direction.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. In communicating with people in these current times, what do you feel are two or three of their deepest concerns? And with what you're doing with the Meaningful Life Center and with your book, what do you feel gives them some kind of hope or awareness of where they can be and how they can overcome such things?
Yeah, I think if I were to spell out a few of them, I think uncertainty is a very big one today. The pandemic has exposed the uncertainty of our times and our future. People realizing we know very little. We all thought we had control, and we realize we're not in control. So I think there's almost a psychological weakness, a collective one, that has settled in that people maybe don't speak about so much, but I feel a sense of tentativeness that will probably remain for a while. It doesn't go away quickly. So how do you counter uncertainty is by looking at the things that you're certain about. I always, when I speak or I teach, I always ask people, I say, tell me three things you're absolutely certain about that you will fight for, that you really believe in. And I remember one woman raising her hand once and said, you know what, that's a great question. I haven't thought about that since I was a child. You know, we don't think about it because when your things are going well, okay, I'm going to a restaurant tonight, I have a party to go to, going to a baseball game. And the things that we're certain about, is it the love in your life? Is it your marriage and your family? Is it your values? You know, and you suddenly realize that almost everything that is materialistic, you're not certain about. It doesn't provide true security. I mean, it comes and goes. So what I try to do, and my team at Meaningful Life Center, is try to help people crystallize the things they're certain about, those values, and do something about it. I always like to say, immerse your soul in a spiritual spa. SPA as an acronym of study, prayer, and action. You know, cognitive and emotional and behavioral conditioning. Every day, study something spiritual, pray in your own way, it could be a poem, something that touches your heart, and act. Do a good act. Kindness. Find something new to do. Go take a walk with a child that may need special attention. Go reach out to the needy. Reach out to a stranger. Reach out even to your family that you may have been estranged from. So when you do that, your soul begins to come alive, and you are focusing the things that are certain, and that uncertainty that surrounds us becomes less of a factor in our lives. You know, we spoke about you have to have those anchors. Without the anchors, a ship at sea will be lost and just will continue to demoralize and debilitate us. So that uncertainty is a big one in my mind of what's going on today. I think also how to deal with disruption. People see disruption as very disturbing. You know, when are we getting back to normal? And I think it's important because almost all disciplines, maybe all spiritual disciplines, teach that disruption is really a transition to a new birthing. Every birth will be followed by disruption. The egg will crack before the chick emerges. A mother will go through birth pains before she gives birth to a child. Creativity will always be preceded by frustration. So understanding that disruption is not the end of the story, and you have to look at the bird's eye view, the bigger picture, that you're on a journey, and your narrative is not over in 2021 or 2020, but that it's going somewhere, that you are part of a new growth. Open yourself up to new opportunities, broaden your horizons instead of being stuck in the old patterns and paradigms. Basically opening yourself up to a paradigm shift. So that's another thing I focus a lot on in my teaching and writings and blogs and podcasts, whatever you call them all, is to help people understand that a disruption is really a transition. The caterpillar is metamorphosizing into a butterfly. And when you see it that way, it's, first of all, it relieves the pressure of feeling, oh, it's all over. And secondly, it really gives you hope toward a better tomorrow. Those are a few things that come to mind. Obviously, different people are dealing with different issues. But I see this as a tremendous opportunity now for people to revisit their values. What do you stand for? What do you really believe in? What do you really want? What mark do you really want to leave in this universe?
It's really powerful. It's almost like there's kind of across the culture that people are a little bit anesthetized from this experience. There's like a level of fog, or, you know, it's just an awareness. I don't know that I've really spoken it out loud, but it just feels like what you're saying and the tools and the practices that you're giving are so powerful, like do something entirely different than what you're used to doing may play a part in that kind of awakening, you know, to get back to normal. I always laugh and say that's the cycle on the washing machine. That was Jerry Seinfeld's statement, you know.
That's good. Yeah, that's good.
Because there's no going back. It's only moving forward with what we have. But it's like, you know, just reminding people you'll get what you bring. So if you want to see more life, you know, bring more life and bring more hope and joy to your children and do things different. It's exciting when you have an opportunity to choose different. And like you were saying earlier, you know, a lot of things that we tie up in our calendar are more doing distractions than they are, you know, often anything else.
Exactly. And, you know, today people have also realized that a lot of things we thought are necessary are really optional. And when you come to realize that, it also frees you somewhat. I mean, we really thought we couldn't live without certain things, and now we realize you could. And that opens up. The fact is also that we live in a society, because of technology, so many people live vicariously through others. You know, the soap opera characters, the sports heroes, Hollywood figures, and cellulite characters, as they say, cellulite heroes. And we, like someone say, well, what are you into? I'm into sports. Okay, what sports do you play? Well, I watch baseball and football and basketball. So you're watching and you think that you're into sports. What do they say? They say in a baseball stadium you have 60,000 people who need to lose weight are watching 18 people who don't need to. You know, so the point is, because of living vicariously, it's like almost takes away the responsibility of your own, living your own life. And there's a lot of challenges, what should I say? But on the other hand, they're great gifts. Look, I'm not the fire and brimstone against technology. I use it all the time because it has the ability to really bring a message to so many people. But you need to know who's in control. If your smartphone is controlling you, it's an addiction, period. And many of us are suffering from many addictions today. Some people call them attachment disorder. You know, you're looking for attachment, love. You can't find it in healthy places, so we get attached to unhealthy things. And I am a very optimistic and positive person. I feel human beings have what it takes. Just have to help, as I said before, carve away the distractions and allow that inner beauty to emerge.
Yeah, I do too. I feel that on the other side of all these things will be new ways of looking at life and values and what seems to be so important. And you've heard those stories, and I certainly have, where in the midst of this, you know, timeout that originally we thought would be a few months, then became a year, that people have, you know, gone deep and really, you know, searched their purpose and, you know, decided to relocate across the country or to another country or to not work in an office building anymore, but to work out of their home or, you know, whatever it is. We don't hear anything about that because it doesn't sell, you know, pharmaceuticals and it doesn't sell addiction But there's a lot of those amazing stories that are out there that that people are really tuning into, and it's wonderful to hear about those.
Look, you hear the acts of nobility and beauty and love. People who I've heard from couples, they said, you know, we haven't had a dinner together for years. Now we're sitting. We were first terrified. We didn't know whether we can sit with each other. And people discover deeper dimensions. This is, no question, this is a tremendous opportunity. I mean, we all wish the virus and the pandemic just disappears. But I would love to believe that we have learned from it and we become greater people. Unfortunately, we also see a rise of some of the lower elements, racism and discrimination and anti-Semitism and other stuff like that. So we have to counter that. A little light dispels darkness, more love, more unconditional kindness, and more programs like yours that spread light and then spirit and beauty. And without being naive, you know, we know realities on the ground are not always so pleasant, but we are people of spirit, and we have the ability to be agents of light and ambassadors of kindness and love in this world. And that's what we need to embrace. And today, in modern science, we know the butterfly effect, the ripple effect of one small act, one good word, one kind word, one good thought can literally transform your world and the entire world. That's what we absolutely believe in. And I have no doubt that if we rise to the occasion, we will bring global and personal transformation, a paradigm shift.
That's beautiful. I'm so grateful all of you have tuned in with us today. And you can go to meaningfullife.com. And Rabbi Simon, you have a program tonight, don't you? At 8:30 Eastern Standard, anti-Semitism Rise.
Today it's about,
is history repeating itself? That sounds very powerful.
Yeah. So I do almost 15 programs a week nowadays that are all online because of the condition. And if you go to meaningfullife.com, there's a whole robust menu of different options, different subjects. And I try to address the most relevant issues of our time with a deeper look at it and how to turn it into something that we can, that makes us better people and greater people. So yeah, that's so check it all out, meaningfullife.com. You can subscribe there, many different emails and you name it, YouTube, Instagram, Facebook. I'm on all the platforms, let's put it that way.
Yeah, I saw that a while ago that you followed me on Instagram, so I have to follow you back so I can see what you're doing. I'm kind of a newbie on Instagram. I was on Facebook and Twitter, and going to this one and that one, and then we have this one, and it's like, what?
Temple, let me admit something to you. I'm a novice with all of it. I have people that do it.
Exactly.
I offer the content, but they do the work.
Yeah, that makes a difference, doesn't it? Well, it's just been a pleasure in my heart to be with you today, and blessings to you.
My blessings to you. God bless you and your great work, and all the work of and all the people that you reach. And thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for listening. This is Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
I'm Rachel Corpus, an angel communicator, psychic medium, and host of the Angel Talk podcast. This show is meant to help you remember who you are, a limitless being with shoes and socks on. And along the way, we'll connect to people on the other side and experts in the field like authors, healers, animal communicators, and more. Listen to all my shows at Mind, Body, Spirit FM or wherever you get your podcasts.